May it please the court. My name is Steve Stenger, and I am here on behalf of the appellant, Jeffrey Borders. And, Your Honors, I believe that probably the most important issue in this case, it's a two-issue brief that I filed, and I believe that the most important issue for Mr. Borders is that the district court sentence was unreasonable in its entirety because the district court failed to provide a compelling explanation for the sentence, and the sentence was not based on considerations that were specific to Mr. Borders' case.
Mr. Stenger, in the PSR calculation, did the probation officer recommend a three-level reduction for acceptance of responsibility? I know the plea agreement contained a three-level reduction, but was there a reduction of acceptance in the PSR's recommended sentence of 130 to 162 months?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe there was. And if you, Your Honor, are referring to the difference between the plea agreement and the PSR in the case, what I believe happened is the following. I was not involved in the plea process in this matter. I was appointed following the plea and all of those happenings. However, what I believe happened, and I believe this from my review of the PSR, and I believe I may have had a conversation about this with Mr. Burke, there was a mistake, I think, essentially, in the plea agreement. And I believe that the plea agreement applied a version of the guidelines that did not include a 2003 amendment that provided for a base level of 6 as contained in the PSR. However, under the plea agreement, I believe the base offense level would have been a 4. So I believe that's where the difference came in the pre-sentence investigation report from the plea. We sort of started off, well, we did. We started off at that point as what the PSR contained as far as the offense level went.
He got the acceptance of responsibility.
I believe he did, Your Honor, yes. I believe he did. And essentially what happened is it resulted in a guideline range of 130 to 162 months. The judge then I believe it's inappropriate to say that he upwardly parted according to current law. However, the judge gave a variant sentence, and it was an upward out-of-guidelines range sentence of 180 months. It amounted to an 18-month upward departure. And where I'd like to start my argument is essentially the transcript. The judge's sentence and explanation of the sentence below is contained in approximately 33 lines of the transcript. And essentially, if I could just briefly paraphrase and perhaps go through this, the court began by saying, "Mr. Borders, I'm going to be very blunt with you. You are not entitled to mercy, and you're not entitled to leniency, because my client had asked for that in his statement to the court. He stated that you're nothing but a liar, a cheat, and a flim-flam man."
Well,
Your Honor, I, of course, would not concede that my client is a liar, a cheat, or a flim-flam man. His record speaks for itself, and I can't argue that. There's no doubt that I can. However, the judge's statements throughout these 33 lines are merely conclusions. I find them to be conclusions.
I mean, here's a fellow who tries to pin some of his prior conduct on his own children. And yet the judge gave him acceptance of responsibility.
Well, Your Honor, with respect to those items, and if you're speaking to the statement made by the defendant in court, is that what you're speaking to, Your Honor?
Yes.
If I can be very frank with the court, and I mean this very respectfully, I think that what he was telling the judge as he stood there was factually correct. I think the judge characterized it as Mr. Borders trying to pin it on other individuals.
One of them was 17 years old.
But, Your Honor, I think that with respect to the specifics of what Mr. Borders was speaking about, I believe that those things that Mr. Borders was speaking about, unfortunately, were his son sort of driving the ship at that point. Not throughout the whole course of this, by any means. I mean, it's fairly clear Mr. Borders does accept responsibility for bringing his family into this. He definitely does. But with respect to those specific instances that he was talking about with the judge, I believe that he was being as honest as he could be. And perhaps, conceptually, how does a 17-year-old bring a grown man along into even a specific instance of misconduct? Nevertheless, he was telling the technical truth that his son had actually brought about what they were talking about there. But it just appears to me that from the sentencing transcript that we have a lot of conclusions made by the judge. Things such as, you're a bad seed. What you have done ripping off the people you've ripped off, basically, you can't help yourself. You're just a career criminal, and essentially, you're a bad seed.
What's the matter? What's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, what I think is wrong with that is you could make those statements, and I don't say this flippantly, I think that one could make those statements about 90% of the people that I have represented in the past.
I had a terrible practice, my poor boy.
what a garden.
And I say that not flippantly. I mean, I really did consider that before I came here, that was one of my arguments. It just happens to be true. I mean, the business of criminal defense is a business that involves unsavory people. And to say that someone's unsavory and I'm going to give you an upward departure.
The prosecution occasionally encounters them, too. We use them as witnesses all the time.
And, Your Honor, I would agree with that.
Look,
wholeheartedly.
The problem is that he, in this case, seems extremely agitated with regard to this particular defendant.
And, Your Honor, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that the issue that creates is, and I was asking it to myself as the judge was speaking, why? I understand that this man has a criminal past. He was at a criminal category of 6. This man was at a advisory guideline range.
But that's why. I mean, he has a continuing criminal background. He gets caught in this while he's waiting to plead or try, I can't recall. He's involved in another scheme, and he brings his family members into it. I mean, this guy seems much worse than the guy who runs.
Or at the very least, his learning curve is a flat line. I mean,
and Your Honor, that may have truly been the case. I would only say this for him. If you look at what he was doing and what he was doing when he was on bond, I'm not going to trivialize what it was, but he was calling up restaurants and demanding his money back.
He had no money in.
Exactly, Your Honor, and I understand
that. He was extorting restaurants.
I do, and I understand that, and I'm not saying that there's anything good about that, but...
Although some of the restaurants have served such lousy food over the years, maybe they had something coming, you know.
You know,
it's hard to do that way.
Mr. Stenger, you've really done as good a job as anyone could have hoped for Mr. Borders. But you've got Judge Gilbert recounting his abysmal history, including 8 prior felonies, and 5 of those felonies are for conduct similar to the ad scam. I mean, you know, he finds that he's a threat to the general public. He finds that he needs severe punishment. He finds that the high end of the guidelines isn't sufficient for him, that it doesn't take into account everything that Mr. Borders has done. And then he imposes a prison sentence of 180 months. You know, what can we do sitting up here after all of that? What could we possibly do?
Well, Your Honor, what I would posit to the court is that perhaps what could be done is to remand for specifics, more specific considerations. And I know that you've stated those, Your Honor. You've stated them very eloquently. However, with respect to the way that the court below stated them, it wasn't quite as clear. I think that your comments, and I mean this very respectfully, I think that they are a more summary form. Perhaps more detailed than the court really got.
Do you know that there's a possibility when you remand that the judge could take a look at all of this in closer detail and say 220, I mean, you take a chance.
And Your Honor,
and we've seen that.
I understand that, Your Honor. And I would I had a case one time that involved North Carolina versus Pierce, which was vindictive sentencing, and something what I argued was a variant of that had occurred. And I do know that that is a possibility. But and my client in this matter urged me to file a notice of appeal for him, and that is why I'm here. And with respect to his 130 to 162-month advisory guideline range that he had, I think that 162 months at the high end of that range would have incapacitated this gentleman, considering the nature of the crimes that he considered. I think that it would have addressed the factors set forth in 3553A.
How old is he?
He is a man that is in his... at the time, he was 41 at the time of sentencing, so I believe he is approaching his 42nd birthday.
Well, there's another 40 or 45 good years left to scam the world. So,
thank you, Mr. Stinger.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Now you can have a seat at council table if you
want. May it please the court. Kevin Burke on behalf of the United States, and I was counsel in the district court proceedings. And to answer some of your questions, Your Honor, about the plea agreement, when the plea agreement was made, what was not contemplated was the January 25th, 2003 amendment, which the probation office picked up, resulting in a two-level increase over the plea agreement. Mr. Borders did, in fact, receive a three-level reduction for acceptance of responsibility, which I believe, as the court has picked up, is a close call given his allocution in the case. The government had initially agreed to recommend the low end of the sentencing guidelines, and then when the defendant committed the fraudulent conduct on bond and was revoked, by explicit terms of the plea agreement, the government could have revoked the entire agreement. Rather, what the government then did is told the defense that it would, in fact, honor the plea agreement, except that it would no longer recommend the low end, and informed the court of that as well at sentencing. So that's some of the procedural history of the plea agreement. Counsel has referred to Judge Gilbert's comments as being just conclusions. The observations of Judge Gilbert at sentencing were well-grounded perceptions based on indisputed facts. And I won't belabor many of those facts that the court here has even pointed out, as Judge Gilbert did. But Mr. Borders did have 15 prior convictions, 8 of those felonies, 5 of those being for fraud. 6 of those prior convictions did not even count as points in his criminal history calculation, and yet he still managed to reach a criminal history category of 6 at the top end. The question was, what would the point be of returning this case back to Judge Gilbert? Should it be remanded for more specific considerations? But as this court knows, especially with recent decision from the Supreme Court, a sentencing judge, in considering 3553 actors, need not say much at all. But Judge Gilbert said plenty. In fact, very specifically and pointedly addressed at least 3 of the 3553A factors. The reality is that Judge Gilbert found, and it was well-founded, that Mr. Borders had executed this scheme over a period of 7 years, that he pulled his wife into it, that he pulled his minor son into it. Both his wife and his son ended up being convicted in this case. Not only did Mr. Borders execute some of this scheme while under supervision of a criminal justice sentence, he was directing much of this scheme while incarcerated. Given these, as Judge Gilbert called them, abysmal facts, a modest deviation of only 11% above the upper end of the guidelines range is an eminently reasonable decision. And if there are no further questions, the government
I have one question which the record may not be able to answer, but this restaurant scam, did he make any money doing this?
Your Honor, yes. I believe for the most part he was unsuccessful. I do believe he managed to extract money from one or two businesses. What Mr. Borders did in this scheme, his pattern, as far as at least the businesses that we were able to identify while he was out on bond, is to essentially call up a business, say that he had received some service, either food or something along those lines, and that it was substandard, and then call repeatedly. In one case, I believe that he was reported to have called 70 times, and just by sheer brute badgering, was able to cause these businesses to at times pay him just to make him go away.
Thank you, Mr. Burke.
Thank you.
Mr. Stenger, you had time has expired. The court, as Judge Rovner already has, wishes to express its thanks for your vigorous representation of your client. Thank you very much.